It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is about 43 degrees. East winds at 9 miles per hour at the airport. They have 9 miles of visibility there. And the Weather Service is optimistically calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, although with some scattered showers. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak City Police Chief Tim Putney has thrown his name into the ring to be the next city manager. A one-of-a-kind hatchery in Kodiak will attempt to aid Karluk Kings. And state lawmakers passed a resolution supporting Alaska Native corporations' special participation in the federal contracting program. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Hurst. President Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping met in Beijing today, discussing the war in Iran, global trade, and energy security. But as NPR's Tamara Keith reports, it doesn't appear that the talks between the two yielded any significant progress.
On Thursday, Trump and Xi held a bilateral meeting that for a time included CEOs from top U.S. corporations. Then in the evening at a formal banquet, the two leaders toasted each other and the relationship between their nations. Trump made clear he wants this visit to be the start of a longer dialogue.
Tonight, it is my honor to extend an invitation to you and Madam Peng to visit us at the White House this September 24th.
Before Trump heads to the airport, the leaders are set to take a friendship photo and share a bilateral tea and lunch. No deals have been announced yet, but there's still time. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Beijing.
Senators passed a resolution today to withhold their own pay during future government shutdowns. NPR's Ava Berger reports the move brings them in line with most federal employees who receive back pay only when the government reopens.
The resolution was approved by voice without any senators objecting. Senator John Kennedy, the Louisiana Republican, called his measure a, quote, shared sacrifice with other federal employees who miss paychecks.
It's got to stop. Shutting down government should not be our default solution to our refusal to work out our issues.
Congress reopened the Department of Homeland Security last month after the agency went unfunded for more than 70 days. Kennedy's measure, which won't apply to House members, will take effect after the midterm elections. Ava Berger, NPR News, The Capitol.
Protesters have taken to the streets of Cuba's capital after a more than 24-hour blackout. NPR's Ada Peralta reports the country says it has no fuel to turn the power back on.
Videos posted on social media show Cubans banging on pots on the streets in Havana. Protesters complained that their homes were hot and that internet service had been disrupted. Vicente de la O. Levy, Cuba's Minister of Energy, said the electrical grid is going through one of its most trying moments. The U.S. has enacted a de facto oil blockade, and the 100,000 tons of Russian crude that arrived in April has now been used up. The energy minister says the system is now operating basically without reserves. Cuba is also relying on its solar panels, but its aging energy grid can't handle the fluctuating voltage. It means that for now, about 70% of the island is without power. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Mexico City.
Wall Street higher by the close. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
NPR News.
The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center provides confidential advocacy and support for victims and survivors of domestic violence. In partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association, KWRCC also offers programs like Gather and Grow, a free 5-week group that uses art and creative expression to explore boundaries, relationship goals, and healing. All are welcome. Gather and Grow meets Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. in May. Dinner and art materials are provided. More information is available at 907-486-6171 or by email at outreach@kwrcc.org.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's police chief has thrown his name into the ring to be the next city manager. He is now one of 19 applicants being considered by the city council for the job. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more.
This is at least the third time in the last 2 years the city has started the hiring process for a permanent city manager. The list of applicants this time around includes a former resident who worked at the Kodiak Baptist Mission for 8 summers, a former mayor of the city of Fairbanks, and now the police chief for the Kodiak Police Department. Tim Putney officially sent his application to city staff on May 4th, according to city documents. Putney, who is an alumni of Kodiak High School, has worked for the police department for more than 2 decades and has been police chief for 8 of those years. He told KMXT via email that the city manager job, quote, feels like the next logical step in my career with the city, end quote. However, Putney is currently ineligible for the city manager job because of where he lives on the island. He told KMXT he does not live within city limits, which is where city code requires the city manager to reside. The city council put a proposition on the ballot in October of 2024 asking city voters to expand the residency requirements for the city manager to within 12 road miles of city limits, which would include areas like Bell's Flats and neighborhoods near Menashka. But that was voted down. The council is once again considering a charter amendment to the city manager residency requirements that would be put to voters during this fall's election, but the wording has not been finalized yet. Putney says if he is not selected for the city manager job, then he will continue in his role leading the Kodiak Police Department. And for transparency, KMXT employee Terry Haynes is also the Kodiak City Mayor, who presides over the city council. As KMXT's morning host, Haynes makes editorial decisions about what airs in local newscasts, but he did not edit or review this story before it was aired. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Hatcheries in Alaska are usually in the business of providing stable fish harvests for commercial, sport, and subsistence fishers alike. But a hatchery in Kodiak is about to embark on a new adventure, the rehabilitation of a declining Chinook salmon run on the southwest side of the island. KMXT's Catherine Irving reports.
At the turn of the century, the Karlik River, which runs by the village of Karlik, was booming with king salmon, which are also called Chinook, and people traveled from all over the world to catch them. Tyler Pollum is a Kodiak area sport fish biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A lot of folks still remember they call it the Mighty Karlik River in the early 2000s. It was so popular that there was a limited use. During the king salmon season, you had to get a permit to go down there.
The population has since tanked, and catch-and-keep sport fishing for kings has been closed on the river since 2007. Subsistence fishing for kings was banned the year after. But the Karlik's luck might soon change. A project that will use Kodiak hatcheries to rehabilitate the Karlik River Chinook salmon run has officially gotten a green light after almost 10 years of planning. It will be the first project of its kind in the state. Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang sent an official approval letter to the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association, which operates both Kodiak hatcheries, earlier this month. Chinook salmon across the state are struggling, and the Karlik Kings are no exception. The run has not consistently met its escapement goal for the last 2 decades. Last year, only 93 Chinook returned to the river. The year before, it was just 76. Kyle Wolver is the research manager with the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association. He says the low number of Karlik Kings is the reason the river is the guinea pig for this project.
It's time to do something. And with the such small returns that we're seeing on the river, we need to make it an immediate, because they may not be there next year at all.
The Aquaculture Association's plan is to collect eggs from the returning Karlik Chinook and bring the eggs back to Pillar Creek Hatchery, which is closer to town. They'll raise them there until they are smolt before returning them back to the river and repeat the process over the next few years. Wolver says the plan differs from regular hatchery operations in two big ways. One, they plan to spawn the Karluk salmon in the wild and release only the offspring of those wild-spawned fish. Two, they're doing it for the sake of rehabilitating the wild king run rather than to boost fish harvest. Scientists are pretty sure that the Karluk King's decline has to do with the warming river. Chinook salmon usually return 5 years after they're born. Pollum says the conditions in the river were unusually hot and dry about 5 years before the last bad runs, which made it harder for salmon to spawn and fry to survive. But he says the salmon returning this year were born in a cooler and wetter summer.
While we don't expect to have a lot of king salmon, the hope is that we have something significantly more than 76 or 93. There's a short window because the returns from these low returns these last several years will be coming back.
The project isn't going to be without its challenges. The Karluk's remote location makes it difficult to get equipment out there, and chartering flights to the river is expensive. And Wolliver says they don't know how the river might change in the next few years. But he's hopeful that their project will work.
We don't want to take a dismal approach. We're doing this for a reason. If we didn't believe it would work, we wouldn't be doing it.
Wolliver hopes that the project could have broader impacts, too. Other Chinook populations, like those in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, are facing different threats than the Karluk Run. But if the hatchery's gambit is successful, Wolliver says it could help create a model for Chinook populations across Alaska. Pollum says sport fishers shouldn't bank on fishing the Karluk anytime soon, but with luck, he says fishermen could one day get another chance at catching a Karluk King. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
Earlier this week, state lawmakers unanimously passed a resolution to support Alaska Native Corporation's participation in a federal contracting program. The show of support comes amid increased scrutiny over the program and growing concerns from Native contractors. Alona Nyden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Alaska legislators passed a joint resolution supporting Native participation in federal contracting through the 8A Business Development Program. The program falls under the U.S. Small Business Administration and allows disadvantaged individuals, tribes, and Alaska Native corporations to compete for federal contracts. Haven Harris is the Senior Vice President of Growth and Strategy at Bering Straits Native Corporation and says those contracts are crucial for his organization.
We were able to give out a record dividend last year. We gave out our first special dividend ever just a month ago, and it's all because of the benefits of federal contracting for us.
For Alaska Native corporations, federal contracts are often their primary source of revenue and help pay dividends to shareholders and support services in their communities. But over the past year, the program has faced increased scrutiny. Several federal agencies have been reviewing the program, and U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth called it, quote, the oldest DEI program in the federal government, end quote. Native contractors across the state and country say they're concerned that the government is awarding fewer contracts and has not been accepting new applications into the program. Harris is also a board co-chair of Native American Contractors Association. He says that in the past year,
8A contracts have been getting awarded at a lesser rate than they were previously.
Harris says no new businesses have been accepted into the program since August of last year. He says back in 2024, a record of 600 new applications were approved, but last year it was just 65, almost 10 times less. The Native American Contractors Association and about 50 other Native organizations, many of them in Alaska, signed a letter to the federal government earlier this month and asked it to resume a timely review of applications.
And the gist of the letter was essentially to ask the SBA to really come and sit at the table with us. And then more specifically, we'd like more information on why the SBA has not approved an 8A application since about August 15th of 2025.
Harris says so far they've received responses from congressional delegations from across the country. The organization has been in contact with members of the Small Business Administration, hoping to set up a formal meeting with the agency. Alaska's congressional delegation and Governor Mike Dunleavy have signaled their support toward the program. And Harris says the legislature's joint resolution is also a helpful step. Nicole Borromeo is the president of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act Regional Association, representing local Native corporations. She helped move forward the legislature's joint resolution in support of the program and says she's glad to see its universal recognition.
We believe that once our federal partners and the administration understands the efficiency tool that they have in the 8A program and the good work that we have done, the value to taxpayers and the warfighter as well, that we will be back to the cadence that we've become used to.
Both Borromeo and Harris say that despite recent slowdowns and challenges, they hope the 8A program continues to benefit Alaska Native corporations and their shareholders. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naitin.
Senator Lisa Murkowski voted against the war in Iran on Wednesday for the first time since it began at the end of April. The Associated Press reports that despite Murkowski's vote, her fellow Senate Republicans again blocked the Democratic legislation that would have halted President Donald Trump's war with Iran. Still, the number of GOP senators voting against the war grew, and the close 49-50 vote on the War Powers legislation reflected growing unease. Even if it were to pass the Senate, a War Powers resolution would have a slim chance of passing the House and would also certainly be vetoed by Trump. But Democrats say the votes are about building political pressure on the president, either to withdraw from the conflict or to seek congressional authorization. The White House has asserted that it does not need congressional authorization for the war and has circumvented legal requirements to gain approval from Congress to continue the military campaign. The administration claims it has terminated hostilities with Iran because the U.S. has entered a ceasefire. That posture has created tension between the Republican-controlled Congress and the White House because presidents under the War Powers Resolution of 1973 are required to obtain authorization from Congress after 60 days of engaging in a conflict. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth told lawmakers this week that the U.S. could start attacking Iran again without the White House seeking congressional approval. He told Murkowski during a hearing on Tuesday that the Trump administration believes it has all the authorities necessary. Murkowski voiced skepticism about that argument. She pointed to the troops and warships deployed to the region, saying, quote, "It doesn't appear that hostilities have ended," end quote. Sitka's childcare system has the capacity to serve only about half the young children who need it. That's according to a childcare needs assessment that was presented to the Sitka Assembly at its meeting on Tuesday night. KCAW's Hope McKinney reports.
For years, parents and providers in Sitka have said childcare capacity on the island is at its limit. Now, the Sitka Assembly is taking steps to address the issue. Earlier this year, the Assembly hired the Southeast Childhood Collective to conduct a study in an effort to understand and tackle the community's childcare shortage. The 30-page report analyzes the island's childcare system and outlines three programming options to improve stability, strengthen the workforce, and expand access to care. Blue Scheibler is executive director of the regional nonprofit. Speaking at the meeting on May 12th, she said city governments across the state are trying to step it up because lack of childcare access is hurting local economies, affecting every sector of the workforce.
We hear this from businesses in almost every industry. We hear it from chambers across the state and across the country, that the number one reason they have a hard time attracting employees and keeping employees because they can't find childcare.
The report lays out three main childcare constraints: supply and demand imbalance, workforce limitations, and affordability. It estimates that around 485 young children in Sitka require regular childcare. The licensed system has the capacity to serve about half of that. The report also says local childcare workers face a persistent wage gap that limits recruitment to the field and estimates monthly tuition in Sitka far exceeds the federal threshold for affordable childcare. Scheibler said the private market can't increase the child care supply on its own. A sustained public investment is needed, and strengthening child care is a long-term investment in Sitka's future.
It's important to note that the impacts of supply shortages extend across the community in terms of reduced workforce participation, employer recruitment challenges, and ultimately population decline. That has been talked about throughout the Southeast region quite a bit. that we're losing families and the workforce age demographic in general because they can't find childcare.
The report suggests several program options that could cost anywhere from just under $300,000 to $2 million. They range from workforce incentives to subsidies and scholarships. But how the city would pay for the programs is still unclear. Three options were put forward to raise the necessary funds, including a 2% alcohol tax, a 1% seasonal sales tax for the winter months, or an additional 1% summer season tax. Assemblymember Katie Riley said she's extremely uncomfortable with a winter sales tax increase. She said it would be a burden that the working families in the community simply can't afford.
That doesn't mean that they're not thinking long term. That doesn't mean that we don't know the importance of this. That means that right now, cost pressures are insane, and people do need to look out for their short-term costs in addition to thinking about that long-term picture.
Assembly members agreed they want robust community input and further discussion before moving forward. Here's Assembly member Tim Pike.
I've heard the word cost a lot. I actually think the right word is investment, right? We're investing in our children as a community, and I think it's important for us to keep that in front of us as we look at this funding process. It's not a cost. It's an investment. It will pay dividends for us down the road, and it helps our community go forward.
The assembly plans to hold a public work session in the next month to further discuss the issue. In Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
As lawmakers spar over a wide range of issues in the final days of the Alaska legislature's regular session, one idea is bringing them together. Alaska Public Media reports the State House of Representatives voted unanimously on Wednesday to make the giant green cabbage Alaska's official state vegetable. If approved by the Senate, the giant green cabbage would join the willow ptarmigan, the king salmon, the Sitka spruce, and the pre-1964 Winchester Model 70 rifle as one of Alaska's official state symbols. Representative Delina Johnson, a Palmer Republican, is the bill's primary sponsor.
Some people would think if you hear the word a cabbage bill that maybe we have nothing else to do, and that's of course not true. This is really a marketing. It is a piece of our marketing of Alaska and our agriculture, and we have not ran out of problems to solve.
But not just a piece of marketing. Johnson says the giant green cabbage, the OS cross cabbage to be precise, is a symbol of Alaska's history. Almost every year for the past 90 years, cabbage growers have competed in a weigh-off at the Alaska State Fair. Palmer's own Scott Robb set a world record with his 138.25-pound cabbage back in 2012. Johnson says the giant green cabbage enabled by the midnight sun is also a fitting symbol of Alaska's spirit.
You have to look at the cabbage and think it's resilient. It's enormous. And it somehow survived so many conditions that that would never thrive in other states, Mr. Speaker, and certainly never get this big.
There's very little time left in this year's legislative session, but the bill could move quickly through the Senate. It's already scheduled for a hearing in the Senate State Affairs Committee today. The ANSEP Acceleration Academy just wrapped up its first year in Nome. The state program launched last fall with 11 local high school students. The inaugural class celebrated last week, and they let friends, families, and KNOM reporter Margaret Sutherland in on some inside jokes, mishaps with Big Betha, and some very specific student electives.
At the end of the year celebration, Michael Deering, the Academy's assistant director, hands out student Oscars.
We know each other the entire year long. We had our students vote, and they elected each of their peers for a student Oscar. Something about their energy, their personality.
Like best online and Zoom presence, most likely to pull an all-nighter and still ace it.
Renee, you were voted by your peers, most likely to have 47 different internet tabs open.
Families play a trivia game with questions like, who got left behind once because they forgot to sign up on the ride list for Big Bertha? That's what the class named the bright orange 15-seater that carried them between the high school and the University of Alaska Fairbanks Northwest campus each day. Program director Casey Miller hosts the trivia. She pulls up their group text thread from that day on the projector.
And this is what we got.
Guys, I think y'all forgot someone. Nebula, Sam, what? Your name wasn't on the list, boy. Y'all done left me, bro.
The ANSAP Acceleration Academy is part of the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, a statewide initiative designed to prepare students for college and careers in science, technology, and other fields. The NOAM program is one of six ANSAP Acceleration Academies in Alaska and the newest site in the state.
It was created with advocacy from the community, from parents who wanted students to get exposure into college, college readiness, post-secondary preparedness, and more college rigor.
In the spring, 5 of the 11 students were enrolled in enough university credits to be considered full-time. Collectively, the group finished 252 total UA credits in prerequisite and higher-level classes. It was all free to them, but worth thousands of dollars in tuition. Next year, the program plans to expand to 20 students. On Fridays, they had what they call enrichment activities, where they went into the community for field researcher activities. Senior Alora Stasinko says the first Friday enrichment activity was testing algae blooms on Nome's beaches.
That's like a huge topic in today's like whole ocean acidity thing, so it was really cool to learn about that and just see all the effects like firsthand and be able to like touch it and it's tangible.
Stasinko says she enrolled in ANSAP to be academically challenged. She balanced college coursework with sports, including volleyball and basketball, earning her the student Oscar, Master Balancing Act.
It was definitely like built for me to do the things I still want to do. I did a lot of my math was recording so I could just watch and, you know, do my online lessons like that. There was a book that I could read if I needed any help, and my math teacher was really understanding.
She racked up the most excused absences while still maintaining her near-perfect GPA. She says the program's mix of in-person and online learning helped make that possible. ANSAP awarded her an over $50,000 a year scholarship to attend UAA or UAF. But right now she plans to go to Shoreline Community College in Washington, where she can keep playing volleyball at a competitive level. Miller says the students were all learning to balance their own acts. They learned how to communicate with professors, study for college exams, and solve scheduling problems, and how not to get left behind by Big Bertha. She says the students needed support in the beginning.
But then, boy, you know, into the semester, we just see students emailing by themselves, connecting with instructors by themselves, going to office hours by themselves, acing a test because they learned how to study in a different way. So much growth. And I think that is one of the most rewarding parts for me.
Next year, ANSAP plans to move the classroom for the expanded program from Nome Belts Middle High School to the UAF Northwest campus. Miller says the move will give students the chance to experience life on a college campus and have more access to college resources. And she says Big Bertha will keep running.
We still will have opportunities daily that we're engaging at Nome Belts. So Big Bertha will be our prime transportation. Here and there.
At the end of the celebration, ANSAP Acceleration Academy's 2 graduating seniors were awarded their orange ANSAP cords, which they will wear at their formal graduation ceremony with Nome Belts at the end of the month. Reporting in Nome, I'm Margaret Sutherland.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your KMXT Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 14th day of May, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 5:47. It will set again at 10:25. That will give us 16 hours and 37 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 9 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 74 degrees. That was set in 1968. And our record low was 29 degrees, set in 1965 and then again in 2012. Currently, it is a fairly warm 43 degrees Fahrenheit here in Kodiak. They're reporting a light rain, but that's not happening here at the station. Out at the airport, they have east winds at 9 miles per hour and 9 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day with scattered showers after 1 p.m. Look for those scattered showers to last until about 7 p.m. Mostly cloudy overnight tonight with a low around 39, east winds to 5, becoming completely calm. Our chance of precipitation, 30% tonight. And partly sunny skies tomorrow, too, with a high near 47, light southeast winds increasing to 5 or 10 in the morning. Rain is likely after 4 a.m., Friday night. Mostly cloudy overnight Friday with a low of 38, southeast winds up to 20, gusting to 30. And look for rain for sure on Saturday. That rain could be heavy at times, and that heavy rain is expected to last overnight Saturday night. Showers are likely for Sunday, just a chance of showers on Monday. We have an incoming tide. It's just about high tide. That will happen at 1:06 this afternoon here on the east side. It'll be 6.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 6:36 p.m. of 1.4 feet. And you have a very low minus tide tomorrow morning at 7:37 a.m., minus 1.4 foot tide here on the east side. Over on the west side, your next high tide will happen at 1:38 this afternoon and be 12.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 7:25 p.m. of 2 feet. And your very low tide tomorrow morning will happen at 8:11 a.m. and be minus 2.6 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Variable 10 for today, tonight, and tomorrow. 5-foot seas today, 4-foot seas tonight. For tomorrow, look for southeast 20 in the afternoon. Seas building to 7 feet Friday night. Look for southeast 30 Friday night. And for Saturday, southeast 35 and 13-foot seas on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 for today, tonight, and tomorrow there as well, with 2-foot seas today and tonight. Look for seas to build to 4 feet in the afternoon as you see east winds to 20 knots tomorrow afternoon. Friday night, east 30 with 7-foot seas, and Saturday, east 35 and seas at 13 feet. Just outside of Kodiak City in Chiniak Bay, variable less than 10 for today, tonight, and tomorrow, 3-foot seas. Look for southeast 15 tomorrow afternoon with 4-foot seas, southeast 25 Friday night with 7-foot seas, and southeast 30 on Saturday with seas building all the way up to 10 feet in Chiniak Bay tomorrow. Oh, on Saturday. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a budget work session tonight in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. That meeting will begin at 5:30. And it will be followed by its regular meeting at 6:30. Both meetings are open to the public, and members are encouraged to tune into KMXT right here at 100.1 FM as well. And the meetings will be web streamed. The link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who need more information, call the clerk at 907-486-8636. And the Kodiak City Council will hold a sales tax work session on Saturday in the City Hall Conference Room. That meeting will begin at 10 a.m. It's open to the public. It will be web-streamed as well. And the link for that and the meeting packet are available at the City of Kodiak website. Again, contact the clerk for more information at 907-486-8636. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session tonight in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Packets available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the clerk's office at 486-9310 with any questions.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.